This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power, and welcome to the Q interview from CBC Podcasts and from Q on CBC Radio 1. Camila Cabello, if you really think about it, leads such an interesting life. Like, to be a pop star is to have private jets, is to have the adulation of millions of teenagers, and to have your songs played at every Shopper's Drug Mart from here to Victoria. But it comes with a certain amount of pressure. Pressure that a lot of people's jobs are relying on you. There's a lot of money relying on you. And how do you possibly be yourself when the stakes are that high? She opened up about the stresses, the realities of being a pop star, and the moment she realized that having a number one hit would not make her happy. Here's my conversation with Camila Cabello. Take me back to the music you listened to when you were a kid. Like, what would have been on your parents' record player?
My parents listened to a lot of, like, I grew up with the classics by, like, Celia Cruz. My dad listened to a lot of Luis Miguel, Alejandro Fernandez, David Bisbal, Maná. Like Shakira with the black hair. So a lot of Latin music when I was a kid. And then as I got older, I like loved Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran, John Mayer, Destiny's Child. So it like, I think my influences changed from different timelines, but a lot of this album was inspired by, I guess, a lot of those different things. But specifically, what I think I touched on that I hadn't before was going back to like the childhood influences.
Yeah. And did you get home during COVID with your family?
So much. I spent all of COVID with my family. Well, the big quarantine period was with my family.
Where's that?
In Miami. And we, Scott and I, made a few of these songs, actually, just him and I, like, in my bedroom in a makeshift studio in Miami. So, like, Quiet, Boys Don't Cry, Everyone at This Party was just me and Scott in, like, my bedroom.
What's the experience like of going home?
It's, I've noticed that it's amazing because I get to be with my family. I get to be with my dogs. I have, like, my best friends that are there. But if I'm there for too long, I get just a teensy bit bored. But I do, like, right now, I'm, like, so excited to go home because I get to be around, like, just, like, the whole Miami vibe is, like, the air, the humidity, it all makes me feel like, oh, this is my environment.
I might be overthinking it, and I tend to do that.
Me too.
But I feel like I can hear all that on this record.
That's awesome. I mean, I don't think you're overthinking it.
Am I onto something?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so much of this album was made in Miami, and the bits that were made in LA are, there was a lot of Miami people. There was like, you know, Miami people and Latin people in the studio. So that vibe is very similar.
It feels intentional. You know what I mean? Like, because it's not an obvious choice, Camila, to make a record like this, to make a record that's so of your roots, sort of a manifestation of where you came from. What led you to want to make this record?
You know, I think that it was intentional in the sense that for me, I was just trying to be a more well-rounded, happy person. It was more of like me forming my own identity as an adult. Because before this album, it was like I had a lot of mental health stuff. I had a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I was like I said, like I found the right therapist. So I got through a lot of the stuff that I feel like was weighing me down and keeping me from just like exploring who do I want to be? What makes me happy? What inspires me? What makes me feel strong, what makes me feel grounded. And in searching for those things, it was really towards the end that I was like, oh, this feels really good having, you know, a Mexican songwriter in the studio, because I'm half Mexican and I like to, you know, talk in my, you know, first language. I like to talk about the songs that remind me of my dad and remind me of being a kid. I just realized that felt right for me. That felt like it was leading me to joy and a sense of, like, you know, identity that, you know, growing up, like, I emigrated with my mom to the United States when I was 7. Then growing up in Miami, you're still kind of in a little bit of a Latin American bubble. And then at 15, going to LA and then kind of traveling the world and being in LA working with these kind of, like, American writers and producers, like, I missed that a lot. Like, I missed that time when I was little. I missed my culture that I get still in Miami. So I think that I was just, like, bringing that to myself. It was almost like my own medicine. So it was, like, intentional in the sense that all of this whole process was me basically just giving joy to myself. Like, I was just like, what's going to make me happy? Who do I want to work with that I trust? What kind of music would make me happy today? What kind of lyric sounds interesting and weird? And how can I stretch myself in a way that makes me feel inspired and makes me look forward to, you know, coming to work tomorrow? So it was all very selfish in a good way. And I think that that's what's made it, like, my best album, because it's not really me doing it for literally anybody else but me.
I know what you mean. And that's something I don't think people talk about with anxiety enough, you know, with my own battle with it. And thank God I've also had some really good therapy, and I've been able to kind of stop the physical manifestations of it from coming around, and I've been able to feel a little bit better. But so, you know, I think you can hear the way I talk right now. When I first started on this show, I kind of talked more like this. Like, I really started of like, hi, Camila, nice to have you here, because I'm from a part of the Canada that has an accent, and I was sort of afraid to show that part of myself.
Mm. I love your accent.
I love your accent. But I do a radio show in Canada. I can't imagine with what you've had to go through over the, like, how much your life has changed over the past, like, 10 years.
Totally. I mean, I think it's like, it might be on a different scale, but I think that it all feels the same. Like, when you are not being true to yourself, or when you're pretending or you're faking in any way, it has those same physical manifestations in my body, even if it's, and in your body, even if it's on different scales. Like, it all just, you know, it sucks to, it's shitty to feel shitty, you know?
I loved your Twitter essay you wrote about that. You wrote this sort of piece on Twitter that I read. Do you remember that? About, I think you had just read White Teeth by Zadie Smith.
Yeah. That was like a week ago, a week and a half ago or something.
Can you talk about that? Like, for people who haven't read it, like, what you were talking about there, if you want?
Yeah, well, she talks a lot about, from an immigrant's point of view, when you kind of just feel like a misfit, like, in the sense that you are in a different country. So where your culture, like, where you're originally from, you don't completely belong there. But then in this new country that you are in, you kind of have one foot out the door because you're so tied and your culture is such a big part of you. So you don't fully belong in the place that you've emigrated to either. And I feel like that, I didn't really feel when I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, I emigrated here so young, like, I don't think it affected me. But as I get older, I'm like, oh yeah, now I see, like, I see the little things that, you know, the feelings that I have around it that I'm now conscious of. And there was a lot of people, like a lot of friends that I had that were like, wow, I totally relate. Like people that come from another country really, really young. And it's like, you're just kind of somewhere in the middle and you like kind of miss something that you don't feel like you can't ever truly completely be a part of. Like there's so many times where I'm like, dang, I wish I could just like go live in Mexico or whatever. But the truth is like, I'm not gonna, at least in the beginning or for a long time, have the same vocabulary or the same experiences and the same, you know, sense of humor, the same slang that everybody there has, because I didn't grow up there, because I am American also. So yeah, it's just that little like, you know, half here, half there, not totally anywhere.
Yeah, that liminal space. But I hear like they say, and this is where I kind of get like, they say that the trick to happiness is to be happy with the liminal space, like to be happy with just how the day is. And my God, Camila, I can hear such joy of who you are on this record. That was only really, you know, punctuated by reading that essay. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like this was the first time too in the actual studio where I just felt like I was fully, fully myself. And I think that we found that along the way, like first with Scott, then it was me, Scott, and Ricky that provided such a safe space in the kind of mental, emotional side of being able to talk about anxiety, being able to talk about fears and, you know, like my neuroses in a way that felt like really safe and I felt really accepted. And then we found, you know, Cheche and Edgar, who are Latin and speak Spanish. And that added this other thing that I didn't even know that I could feel, because it was my first time really working with like Latin songwriters and producers, where I was like, oh, now I feel even more myself, because this feels like, you know, a piece of my dad is here and a piece of my, like, I don't know. It just, it went even deeper, like psychologically for me. I was like, oh, I've gotten something back that I feel like I was missing, but I didn't even know I was missing for these 10 years that I've been working, that I was like in LA.
More of my conversation with Camila Cabello coming up right after this. I hope you enjoyed that ad for a camera stand or a garbage can or a piano bench. I'm looking at things around the studio. Maybe they're advertising that. I don't know. Here's more of my conversation with Camila Cabello. I heard your new song with Ed Sheeran. It's really beautiful and it's really fun. And when I spoke to Ed Sheeran, he said something really interesting to me that I wanted to ask you about. He said that he played Wembley Stadium by himself. It was a huge deal. He'd been working to it his entire life. He thought, this is going to put a period at the end of all of my sentences, everything I've worked for. This is it, you know. Mm-hmm. Gets up on stage, does the show, comes back, and it's kind of like, well, that's it. Like, he was grateful, but like, oh, that's it. And they said the best part of the night was having a glass of wine with his wife.
Right.
You've had massive success, you know, Grammy nominations and number one singles, and you're known around the world, man. Like, you really are. Like, it's you occupy a very rare space in pop culture, and in it you've also somehow managed to somehow create really great music in there too, which also isn't easy, and I know that too. But can you relate to what Ed's saying there?
Yeah, I think I learned that lesson really early, and I think I learned it even in my first album. Like, I remember, and I don't think I've ever been focused on, maybe I was in the beginning where I was more kind of like, I remember Ed saying that about Wembley, where it's like, you just have this one goal and then you reach it and then there's another bigger goal and it's like this never ending thing. And I'm sure I had goals like that, but I remember Havana being like number one, and I was like in my first relationship at the time, and I had my first boyfriend. And I remember being like, I mean, it's amazing that it's number one, but I'm just like giddy about like seeing this guy tonight. And that was like what I was feeling. So I think I learned really early on, like, I don't really, especially now, it's like after my kind of mental health battles of the last year, where from the outside, I had like really successful songs and, you know, things that from the outside were like, oh, like this is a sign of somebody that is a successful person. I was like severely burned out, had almost crippling anxiety to the point where I was just like not functioning.
Yeah.
And that was all happening on the inside. So I think that really cemented it for me that I was like, I don't really care if I'm not happy, if I don't feel connected to my friends and community and the people around me, and if I'm not enjoying life. If mental health for me has become like just the biggest thing, because I'm just like, what is the point? Like, it's never worth that suffering. Like, life is too short. I'm like super, you know, fortunate to be like healthy and safe and alive and have these opportunities. Why would I like choose to live my life, you know, like that, you know, especially after that time where I was like, oh yeah, this song is doing really well. And I feel like I'm like drowning, you know? And that is what I think influenced this album too, where I was like, before that, I would go into studio sessions and I think I did have maybe a little bit more of an outcome focused mentality, where I would go in the studio with like Pharrell or Ryan Tedder or somebody that I really looked up to. And I would just be like, not even focused on having a good time, but I just wanted them to think I was a great songwriter. I just wanted to prove myself to them. And so a lot of the times I would walk out and be like, well, I don't even know if I like that song, because I was just trying to impress them. And this time around, I was like, I don't really care. I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm trying to be myself. I'm trying to, you know, have real trust and connection. I'm trying to have dinner with my, you know, collaborators after we're in the studio. And if this does not help my mental health and like, if this is not enjoyable, I'm literally not doing it. And like, literally for a second, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. And then I found a way that actually was enjoyable. So I definitely feel like I've gotten to that place in my career, like for a few years now, where I'm like, I really don't care. I just want to be happy.
And I just got the rap, but if there's one thing I can hear in this record, it's that. It's happiness and joy.
That's awesome.
Lovely to meet you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. This was a lovely interview.
I'm very grateful to Camila Cabello for opening up like that. It's not easy to do when you have all those people relying on you, but I was very grateful, and I wish I could have talked to her even longer, and maybe someday I'll get to. Our producer is here, the producer of the Q Interview podcast, the pride and joy of Regina, Saskatchewan, Caitlin Swan. Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
You just nodded, by the way. It's a podcast, and I said...
I'm nodding out, can you tell? Not because of you, just because of life. You know, lack of energy.
It's always a good thing you want to hear on a show like this.
I'm actually
nodding off right now, just listening to you. Camila Cabello, after I did the interview... She posted this thing that she posted about our interview, and which is not uncommon. Sometimes people will post like, oh, that was fun, or, you know, I can't understand that guy's accent or whatever.
Right.
Do you know what she posted? Do you know the story?
I don't know.
She said, I just did an interview with this dude.
Oh, this dude.
And he had ASMR voice.
Well, you've been practicing with me especially, because you know I hate ASMR.
I also hate
so
ASMR.
Much.
Can you explain to the folks at home what ASMR is?
It's when it's like you're speaking into the mic, but it's not like this. It's more like, hey, how's it going? It's me, and I'm going to smack my lips, but I'm not going to do that because I hate it so much. It's like it's just hyper aware of audio, I guess, of like mouth sounds, of sounds.
So I guess so good thing or bad thing to be told you have ASMR voice?
Good thing, because almost everyone loves it except for me. So bad thing for me, good thing for the majority of the population who enjoys ASMR.
I'm not crazy about it. It feels very intimate to me.
It is. But radio is an intimate podcast. Radio, audio is very intimate. So I think it's a damn fine compliment.
Oh, this is what you're here for, Caitlin. I appreciate that. And Caitlin also has some listener mail for us today.
Oh, heck yeah, bud. This one is coming from Sherry White. She says...
Sherry White's a Newfoundland name, by the way.
Is it? I wouldn't know.
Sherry White would be... Lots I would have gone whites? To school with like four Sherry Whites. I know a Sherry White I used to go to a... I used to hang out at the pub with back home.
Aw, how sweet. Oh, the whole name even. Not mm-hmm. just like the last name.
No, I know a lot
Sherry
of Sherry Whites.
Sherry White. Yeah. Some sweet. Okay, so this one comes from Sherry White. And she says, me and my husband are going to Gros Morne in Newfoundland. Where do you recommend we go?
Well, first off, you're into a great situation by going to Gros Morne. It's a national park. Do you know about Gros Morne, Caitlin?
No, I don't.
It's a national park in Newfoundland on the west coast of the province. I play out there every summer. I do a festival out there. The writers at Woody Point Festival. Beautiful. There's fjords.
Fjords? What's fjords?
Well, don't ask me that, but they're out there.
Oh, that sounds scary. Yeah. Is this like a mythological creature?
No, it's a geological formation.
That is haunted?
Well, yeah, and it turns into an elf at night.
Ah, okay, that's yes.
So there's fjords out there. It's quite beautiful. You got to go to St. John's. You got to go to Leo's Fish and Chips. Have fish and chips. I get this one a lot, so I think I have my answers done. You got to go to Aaron's Pub. No, that's closed. You have to go.
Just go there anyways.
That's my favorite bar.
Watch
it's closed.
The boarded up place.
Yeah, head on in and see if you can scrounge out a couple of things. Maybe a couple of cans of Coors Light left behind. You should go to a traditional music session. There's a good one Sundays at the Kitty Vitty Brewery. Go to the Ship Pub. See if a guy named Bill is working. And if he is, get him to tell you a dirty joke.
Oh, Bill.
Bill has the best dirty jokes of any person I've ever met in this country.
You keep track of people's dirty jokes?
Well, he's the only one telling them. Oh, he's the only one still
so
telling
he's
dirty
the best?
Jokes.
But he's the best.
Don't you love a dirty joke?
I sure do.
Yeah, we're not going to tell any.
No, we're not.
But there is a certain joy in when a bartender would tell you a dirty joke.
Yes.
Tell me that's not the best thing in the world.
We'll leave it to Bill.
And they're cleanish. Like they're
not
they're offensive
kind of,
dirty
yes.
jokes.
Yeah.
They're just a bit raunchy. So if that's not your thing, just order a beer off Bill and you'll be fine. Mm. But yeah, enjoy. Get to St. John's. If you're in Newfoundland, you're already doing great. Gros Morne is absolutely beautiful. Mm. Go have a cup of coffee. Look at the fjords and also watch out for the fjords.
Well, there you go. Sherry with an I.
Don't forget to rate and review and like and subscribe and all that nice stuff. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.